Well, as we hear the words of Woody Guthrie, he may have been talking about national parks when he wrote those lyrics, "This land is your land, this land is my land." Maybe not. Maybe he was talking about even more than that. But in any case, it's the perfect theme song for tonight's Fireside Lecture with Ranger Amber DeBardi-Laban. She's here going to be lecturing tonight and hosted by the U.S. Forest Service. And in pre-COVID times, of course, all those great lectures were happening at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. But tonight, you can watch Amber's presentation from the comfort of your home on Facebook Live, and that's kind of cool. So, Amber, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate having you here today.
I love to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, and so normally you're the one kind of scheduling these presenters and these lectures. So how does it feel to decide to take center stage and talk to folks about the mission of the Park Service itself?
Oh, I love it. You could ask my parents. I do like to be center stage.
Okay. Well, the U.S. Forest Service.
It's kind of nice
and Great. Well, tell us a little bit about what your theme is tonight, this idea of public lands and national parks.
Yes. So I am a trained historian. That's kind of my jam, the history of things. And I come from Western Pennsylvania, where it's a very multi-use kind of land, where the people use the public lands quite a bit. And so I've always been interested in this idea of where do the public lands come from, and what is their history, and what is their legacy, and what is the future of them? And it kind of morphed into its own program talking about not just all that, but also kind of like, what are the public lands? Because a lot of people don't even know.
Yeah, what do you think was there some common misperceptions that people have about what public land means?
I think the most common misconception is that all of the land management agencies are the same. Specifically, people think the Forest Service and the Park Service are the same. They're actually entirely in different departments of the government. Even.
Yeah, and I even messed it up here in the intro. I was saying Park Service for, you know, and I kind of know the difference, but give us a little background on that. What are the kind of different types of lands, and who are they administered by?
Yeah, so there's four main land management agencies that are considered federal government lands. The one that owns the most land is the Bureau of Land Management. It owns a ton of land. It is mostly for multi-use things. It's a little less recreational, a little more let's put the land to use. And then you have the Fish and Wildlife Service, which are your refuges. A lot of them are to protect exactly what it says, fish and wildlife. They were especially created when everyone was wearing bird feathers in their hat and we almost killed all the birds. So those were created kind of as a reaction to that, and they've been very successful. And you can actually even hunt in some of those. They're a little bit for the, you know, that kind of use for the public. And then you have the Forest Service. I always say the easiest way to figure out what the Forest Service was for is look at how it was created. It was created because we were starting to run out of trees at an alarming rate. And so we needed to create a tree farm, basically. And the Forest Service is in the Department of Agriculture for a reason, which is to say it was always to, you know, grow and harvest these forests sustainably. And then, of course, most people are highly aware of the National Park Service, which is actually one of the youngest agencies and manages the least amount of land. But it holds that land, and almost you almost can't touch that land. You know, there's no hunting in most of it, et cetera. And so those are your traditional.
Yeah, and I think most people think that that's what a refuge is, and that that's what a park. You know, like when they hear the word refuge or park, they think, oh, well, it's set aside. And as you said, actually, three of the four kind of delineations are different types of use, and harvest and extraction can happen in those. And it's sort of was designed to be set up that way.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And even the Park Service, there's a lot of benefit. It provides tons of jobs in the recreation industry, and really so that those parks support the economy of the small towns there around. Because a lot of times those parks are located in places where towns are right out in the middle of, you know, what could be considered wilderness. So it brings a lot of money into those small towns.
Are there key phrases in the formation of these different types of public lands that really give you a key? Like you just said, the Forest Service was created because of the idea that we needed to manage the forests in a way that was sustainable. Are there other key things that are said about, for instance, national parks that are about use, but this type of use?
Yeah, I think the key thing to consider here is preservation versus conservation. Conservation is more about a sustainable management of a resource that you are using, and it doesn't necessarily mean you can't touch it. The National Park Service is much more into preservation, not always, but most of the time, which is kind of like, we're going to preserve this as close to what it is now as we can get. They say unimpaired. The fact of the matter is that sometimes parks are created after things have already been impaired. I used to work for the Park Service.
I see. But unimpaired is a word that is used or is
yes.
– it's a concept that's thought about when creating these parks.
Mm-hmm.
Those parks.
And one of the things I like about them is that they – although they all have these different missions, they all come – all the missions kind of end in the same way, which is to preserve these places for the present and future generations of this country. That's kind of a key thing that threads all these things together.
When we think about Mendenhall Glacier, which is managed by the Forest Service, why did it happen that way? Is there a historical reason why the Mendenhall Glacier is Forest Service and not a national park? Or
yes, so every single piece of public land has kind of some usually complicated histories about how they're created. A lot of it has to do with politics, which I'm not going to get into. Not just because I don't
Wise.
Want to, but because I'm not supposed to. but if you look at places like Yellowstone National Park was actually created as a national park because it wasn't in a state. It couldn't be created as a state park. So they had to make it a federal thing, and that's kind of how the Park Service parks came to be. And then you have things like the Mendenhall Glacier, which to most people that come to visit us, they just think it's a national park. Honestly, at this point, we just kind of go with it because it's just this, you know, I don't want to give them this whole interview every time I talk
right.
to someone.
Be correcting people every single time you meet them. All right.
You got to do that cost benefit analysis. Like, how much does this really matter versus what I want them to take away?
Right.
But with the glacier, it's just the fact that the Tongass was actually created, you know, for use. And then there was this really cool place inside of it. And one of the only glaciers that you could get to by a car for a really, really long time. And so just, it was already part of the forest when it became a tourist destination.
I see. And are there other glaciers in Alaska that are, I'm guessing a lot of the other glaciers in Alaska are in these different types of either parks or Forest Service. I mean, Glacier Bay, that's a national park, right? Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the big one, Glacier Bay.
Yeah.
Glacier Bay, I mean, actually 61% of Alaska is public lands.
Right.
So there's a ton. There's also the wildlife refuges. There's just a lot of that kind of stuff in Alaska.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the lecture series itself, since I've got you on the line mm-hmm. and you're the one that does the kind of booking of it and figuring it out and ministering it. So there's been, you know, you've had great guests so far this year. We've had them on, you know, from the deep sea divers, the glaciologists who we've talked to, and we've even got you had an expert on Southeast Alaska's glacier bears, those mysterious glacier bears. So what's coming up?
So next week, we have got the Eldred Rock Lighthouse Association coming to talk about the work that's been done on preserving the Eldred Rock Lighthouse. They're actually looking for people to help them, and you can get a like cool trip out there if you're willing to put in some elbow grease and stuff. So I really encourage people to come check that one out. As of right now, it's actually going to be in person next week, we think, assuming this, you know, the Rona stays at the level it's at.
Right.
So fingers crossed.
We'll see.
But
yeah.
We will still have it online as well. And then we've also got some people from the fly fishing shop. They're going to come talk about fly fishing the Juneau Road system. We have one of our wildlife biologists talking about birds. So I like to get a nice variety. We have a gardener coming to talk specifically about gardening in Southeast Alaska. So, and then I think our very last one of the season, and I've said these out of order because they're not on the top of my head, but the last one of the season is about entangled whale rescue, which is really cool because they actually want to train locals to help rescue entangled whales. And it is quite a bit of training, as you can imagine. You can't just go, you know, try to sidle up to a whale and help it.
Well, that's an interesting one. I think we've all seen these totally emotional videos online of people untangling whales, but I often think, wait a minute, I mean, that is dangerous, right? So
exactly.
Yeah, okay, well, that's really cool. So just good advice on what to do if you do happen to see a whale that is entangled. Wow. Really cool.
And how to contact them.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that next week's is hopefully going to be in person, but will also be online as well. And a lot of these other lectures have been online. Can we still watch the lectures that have been on?
Yes, the scary thing about doing these online is they're there forever.
Right.
You can never take what you said back.
So you just go to the Facebook site?
They are all
site,
on our Facebook page.
Okay. And that's the way to see tonight's lecture as well, is to go to your Facebook page, and then there's a live link on the Facebook page, right?
Yeah. Yes, and we do understand that there are lots of people have issues with the Facebook thing. I don't blame them. But it is the only thing we can use. We have permission to use right now. We are working on other options for folks. But you should be able to watch it even if you don't have a Facebook account.
So. Okay, yeah. And is there a way to kind of interact if you do watch it on Facebook? Can you ask questions, and is that being monitored?
Yes. So we just stick your questions in the comment section below, and then at the very end, the other ranger will kind of read them out to me and pop them up on the screen, and I'll answer them.
Very cool. Anything else that you want to go over today, just as a preview of what you're going to be talking to tonight?
I don't know. I want to leave a little bit up for surprise.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Really,
you know,
I really hope that people tune in. It's it sounds like it might be a dry subject, but I try to make it, you know, a little bit entertaining.
Well, I don't think it's dry at all, and in fact, you know, especially as you said, here in Alaska, public lands and understanding them, understanding their designations, why they were designated that way, is really, it's part of our everyday life. It's part of, you know, we go by public lands every single day. A lot of people don't ever go by public lands on a typical day.
I think the big takeaway I want people to have is that their public lands are in their lives a lot more than they realize. I think 60 billion people in the United States' drinking water comes from national forests. That's like 20% of America. And most people don't even realize that. So I just want to expand people's knowledge of what they think of when they think of public lands beyond your national parks.
Yeah. Well, Amber DeBartileben, I'm getting through that name. Thanks so much for being here. Have a great talk tonight. It sounds like fascinating to me. And thanks for giving us a preview here. And again, the lecturers are normally out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, and you hope to have that happen even as early as next week. But for right now, for tonight's lecture, if you go to the Visitor Center's Facebook page, at 7 o'clock tonight, I don't know if we said the time, but at 7 o'clock tonight is when it starts. You can observe and listen in to Amber give the talk, and also type in your questions and ask any questions and have that feedback as well, and learn a little bit more about our gigantic backyard here. Amber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Okay, thank you. Really appreciate it.